A Conte to part the Euro. If Italy win the Euros and Immobile top goal scorer, I'll sing the entire song to you in Italian.
Hey!
Myself and Immobile on top.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetsetGo.ie.
All right, so Centra are proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship, and they have teamed up with Wexford's Lee Chin to launch the Centra Community Matters campaign, which will call on people across Ireland to show what matters most to them in their local community. If you want to get involved and to see how Centra will champion communities across Ireland, just follow the hashtag Community Matters on Twitter or at Centra Ireland, or just check out any of their social feeds. Lee Chin is with us now. How are you keeping, Lee?
I'm good, Nathan. I'm good, yeah. Thanks.
You've been doing the media rounds this morning. I was just joking that the same questions come up a lot about Davy Fitzgerald. So if we somehow were to get through the next 20 minutes without Davy Fitzgerald, what takes your interest right now away from Wexford hurling? When you're somehow switching off from hurling, what's going on in Lee Chin's life?
Hey, just if it's not training collectively with the lads, it's probably training on my own. It's a lot of eating and a lot of just trying to get a bit of a balance in your life as well. You need that too. So yeah, there's a lot of different elements, I suppose, that come into your life.
What's the balance then? What gives you that bit of balance?
Just the balance for me is switching off sometimes, just being able to switch off, get out of the house, maybe. I've a lot of friends and you'd spend an awful lot of time with them and you'd be trying to get up to different things, or maybe since the country's opened up a bit, you might travel around a small bit as well, just on a day out, things like that. But yeah, just maybe going for little walks and stuff. But it's the small little things that you just try to get in every day, because it's very intense as well, training and stuff every second day or whatever it might be.
The shortened league championship, will it be more condensed? Are you training a lot more, or are you at a stage in your career, probably a decade in, where you realise what works for your body and actually you can train better rather than more?
Yeah, well, it is important to, look after yourself, and be quite aware of what you're getting yourself into in terms of the condensed season, because it can be very risky in terms of injury if you're not prepared the right way, I suppose. So I think it's why the league was vital in terms of having 5 games as well, just to get yourself some way game conditioned going into the championship. And as you can see, it probably happened with other teams as well and ourselves, that you've seen players pull up a bit in some games. Now, it happens in every game, I suppose it can happen in championship, but it can be a bit of a result sometimes of just a bit of a load, so quickly. But I thought the 5 games was completely necessary for championship preparation. So yeah, look, you're just trying to keep yourself fit and well and get out of, you're trying to get out of the league, I suppose, in 3-3 as well, and in the championship. So all is good on my end from there.
I think it's fair to say, Lee, you're in decent shape and you've looked after yourself over the winter and over the lockdown. When you're doing those sessions by yourself, maybe not the with a hurling hand, what's a Lee Chin solo gym session during like?
Look, it comes a lot down to, I suppose, nutrition as well as that, but I think when you're not training collectively in your off season, it gives you a real opportunity to just focus on you and maybe just build yourself up in certain areas that you wanted to for a long time. And look, it's one or the other. If you're in collectively with a group and you're doing long distance conditioning training, it's very hard to build muscle and it's very hard to build your body in a way that you want it to be. So I suppose having the off season, it was easy to take a bit of time to yourself to really focus on those kind of things. And I made the most of it. I made the most of it throughout lockdown. Hopefully it'll benefit me going forward.
Is your body in a, I won't say a radically different shape than to a couple of years ago, but in terms of a body fat, of what you were focusing on, of where you want to strengthen, what were you looking at?
I think I just got a little bit better with my nutrition awareness. Just working an awful lot with our strength and conditioning coach as well. Just him just giving me a little nuggets here and there and informing me a lot about nutrition and different things. And I picked a lot up in the last year or two. And I think that's kind of excelled me in terms of just the strength and conditioning on that platform. I'm probably a bit stronger now than I was in the past. Probably a little bit heavier. It takes a while adjusting to as well. But I'm happy enough with the way I am.
if you're a little bit heavier, are you running a little bit less? Are you conserving energy a bit more then during a game?
No, I think when you're training specifically, you know, when you're doing a specific type of training, when you're getting heavier, you're getting more powerful. So it might actually just involve you getting quicker, actually. You know, so like I said, it takes a bit of time adapting to, but like you look at any athlete across the country, I suppose, or any athlete across the world, you look at a 100-meter sprinter or a 200-meter sprinter, they're built like they're big athletes. And then you look at, I suppose, a Mo Farah, they're very small. So you just look at things like that, and you know, if you were to go just on weight based on speed, you wouldn't think Mo Farah would be faster than Usain Bolt, you know. So it's about having a bit more power, I suppose, and our game consists of sharp bursts of speed and being powerful in tackles and rooks and different things. So there's a lot of different elements to hurling, and a lot of different athletes are playing the game now. Some are big, some are small, you know, it varies as well. And you just got to adapt your game, I suppose, to what you are. So, look, things are okay for myself on that front at the moment. And like I said, I'm happy enough with how I've dealt with my off season.
And in terms of your practice with a hurl in hand, there's been a lot of focus, obviously, around high scoring and a lot of debate around the Schlitter and the weight of the Schlitter. We James Skettle on, the former Galway goalkeeper, on OTBAM last week, and he was very interesting talking about how he'd actually taken out the weighing scales with a Schlitter from 2005 and a current one, and actually there was little or no difference. I think it was 1 gram in the difference. He was making the point that the biggest change is the rim, which has got an awful lot lower, which plays into the hands perfectly of free takers. Just on that, is that something that you have noticed as well? Are you that methodical in your preparation that you look at every Schlitter and you can see the subtle differences?
You would. Like, there is obviously particular types of Schlitters or brands of Schlitters that hurlers do like. And you'd notice it immediately once you get one into your hand, which kind of Schlitter you'd rather be hitting, but or playing with in general. But
it seems a bit mad that as senior intercounty level, you could train with a different Schlitter than you could play with, because particularly for someone as a free taker where precision is absolute key, you want repetition in every part of it.
Yeah, well, I suppose you have to look at where the game has been restarted from most of the time, as well as from goalkeepers. And obviously the goalkeepers are probably what are selecting what balls they're putting out from the goal, and they're the game balls that are in play then after that. So, like, you know, goalkeepers, their game is very fickle too. Like, they want to be hitting the ball that they can get the best strike with, to put the ball precisely in someone's hand from hookouts. And you know the way goalkeeping has gone these days, that it's through a keyhole, they're trying to put balls and stuff. So they're obviously wanting to be hitting the best balls too. But yeah, you would notice it. Obviously, you would notice what ball you find you'll get the most out of. And I've been hearing and seeing a bit of it around about the bigger rims or the heavier ball. It's not something I particularly agree with, but you know, I think the balls that we're playing with are just fine. The high scoring games, I think it's to be viewed as a very positive thing. I think it's great.
I know there's been controversy in the past around selectors or where Fearn is around the back of goals, throwing different balls to goalkeepers or taking different balls away. Excuse my ignorance of this, but right now in a championship game, when you start next week, could you have several different makes of ball within the one championship game, depending on the team you're playing?
Just from my own experience, Nathan, I know that when I'm hitting the freeze or whatever, you might hit three different brands of balls throughout the game. Yeah, it's not always the same ball you're hitting. I couldn't tell you what brands they are, but I mean, there's different brands of balls throughout the game that will be introduced, and that may be coming down to different goalkeepers having different brands of balls in each goal, and within their bag they might have two or three other brands also, and that's maybe why there's different brands or different balls in games. But I'd imagine when keepers are looking to hook out balls, they're looking to hook out the best balls they have in the bag, you know.
And would that affect your scoring percentage, the different ball?
Not quite sure. Like, I'm not too sure if it would or not.
I suppose you can't let yourself think that, because you don't really have any great control over it.
Yeah, no, you don't. Look, obviously, I'd imagine that, look, if you were to hit X amount of shots from the same position, you know, with a bad ball, not necessarily a bad ball, but a ball that you probably can't control as much. Like, a ball with lower rim, it's easier to control a turn, like the spin on it or the turn on it, or like some free takers or some people know when they hit the ball turns from left to right. And sometimes if a ball has a bigger rim, you just don't know what way the wind might interfere with it. So it could have an effect. It could have an effect in terms of scoring ability if the balls weren't to be as of the quality that we're using at the moment.
The US Open's on this week, and we'll see a lot of side-by-side shots of Rory McIlroy, I suspect, over the weekend with the swing changes he's implementing at the moment with Pete Cowan. And we'll see Rory McIlroy 2021 up against Rory McIlroy 2011. And, you know, there will most definitely be subtle differences that the experts will be able to point out. If we were to put Lee Chin taking freeze 2011 to Lee Chin taking freeze 2021, would it be a different thing?
Well, I don't know, because in 2011 I wasn't hitting freeze. I only really picked up the role a couple of years back. Look, for me, I wasn't always an established free taker in my younger days. It was pretty much something that translated through from the club only a few years back. It was something our club was crying out for, I suppose, at the time. We needed a free taker in the club, and I just kind of put my head on and I worked on him for a couple of months, and I got given the role in a senior relegation match at half time. Wasn't before the game, it was at half time, and I was given the role to hit the freeze in the second half. And it was from
pretty, pretty harsh on the guy who was taking him in the first half.
Yeah, it was, I thought it was pretty harsh on me, a bit of pressure, but it was what it was, and that's how we kind of ended up picking up free taking. I think it was back in maybe 2016 in that relegation game, and ever since then I've been hitting it from my club, and it just translated through to Intercounty, where I was pretty much selected in 2019 to hit the freeze with Richard, and and it's just I'm still there, probably by the skin of my teeth for today. But
How has that affected your training routine? Because like the importance of the free taker, where you can be expected to score anything from 8 to nowadays 16, 17 points off freeze, has it added a big workload to what you're doing?
It does add an extra amount of time. Yeah, like we put into specializing in that area. It is a specialized area, and when you're assigned to it, you owe it to yourself, your team, your county to be putting in the work and the hours. And I think I remember reading something about Shane Dowling before that. Look at this, can be a particular case for some people. I remember Shane mentioning that I think he didn't actually put a whole lot of time into it. And look, at Shane was an excellent free taker. I think he mentioned in the interview that he went to his local field and he could hit 4 or 5 balls, maybe less, and he could leave the pitch. And he was probably just so in tune with it that way. But for someone like me, it takes a bit of time. I put a lot of time into it. And you have to put in extra hours, and you kind of have to create your own routine and your own headspace. But it's one thing that I learned even in the last year or two, is that you kind of got to be able to separate yourself from the actual game and the free taking duties. Because if one of them is going wrong, you don't want it to affect the other either. So it's vice versa that way. So yeah, for me, I've learned that as well throughout the last few years.
That's not an easy thing to do. Like, that does take practice. That does take learning, and it takes disappointment, I guess, as well, to realize, actually, I let that early free to the miss affect things for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Have you spoken to people about that? Or are there people behind the scenes in Wexford and around the club, or former players you've chatted to who've gone through those sort of emotions as to how to make sure you can keep your full focus?
No, not really. It's something that you learn to control yourself. It's something that you learn along the way. Obviously, the only thing that you really want for me, anyway, the free day, is you want the support and the people around you. And I get that in spades with the lads, to support me in terms of if you have an off day or anything, even if you're in the middle of a game, I suppose if you miss a free, there's a well wish coming your way for the next one, sort of stuff. So, like I said, it does take a bit of time yourself to get them right. Some days you can have off days, as we all see around the country, lads do have them. But it's a specialized duty you have on a day. But it's one that I do enjoy.
When you miss a free, are you able to identify quickly why, what went happened, whether it was technical, whether it was mental, whether you got out of your routine? Or do you have time in a match to think like that?
No, sometimes you are. Sometimes you could feel you could do everything perfectly and look at last minute, the ball could tail off to the right. And you might look at it, could be a thing where you'd say, look, I just misjudged the wind a little bit, or I might have been concentrating as much here or there. You might not have got the strike as clean, or sometimes could be, it could come down to the ball also, you know, sometimes it could come down to the ball. If you got a ball with a bigger rim, that mightn't travel through the air the same as a ball with a smaller rim. That can have an effect too.
What is your routine then? So say we're in a match, you're playing Leash Saturday week and we're watching on television and Wexford get a free and Leash in is standing 60 metres out. How long are you taking to take it? What is that process that you go through?
Yeah, there's no real time limit on it. I think it's just more about just focusing on the post and yeah, your pick up and your strike, just keeping an eye on the ball. It's pretty much as basic as that, you know. Everyone has their own routine. It's not really something that I can break down, really, really dissect it, but it's as simple as that. It's just, you know, you're really focused on getting the pick up right and getting your strike off pure. So that's it. Look at the way you line up your body, I suppose, is another thing. You know, obviously you're lining up towards the goal, but I mean, sometimes wind can play an effect to that as well, where you might have to hit it a bit more to the right or left post sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Who do you look at around the game, or who have you looked at around the game for their technique, for the great free takers that you'd, I don't want to say model your game on, but that you would admire and think, actually, there's something I can take from what they do?
Look, I suppose there's some fabulous free takers around the country, obviously, and some fabulous free takers that are in the past. And look, there's no one in particular, I suppose, that I look towards to model their free taking. You have your own style, you have your own routine, your own technique, and you just try to perfect that as best as you can, obviously for the contribution of your side. So yeah, for me, it's just about just myself. It's about me doing my own thing, you know.
What are you now, 28?
28, yeah.
So you're coming up, I think, on nearly a decade at Intercounty Hurling at this stage. I think this might be the ninth season of Intercounty Hurling. Your role overall within the squad as a leader, being one of the more experienced players, is that something you take seriously, that you've embraced, that you think about as to what your role now within that Wexford dressing room is?
Hey, look, I think it comes with experience, with the years that you've mentioned that you're around. I think it's not something, obviously you are aware that you are one of the role models or a leader within the dressing room. And you can, like, you know, you know that you have to show examples of leadership and things like that. But I mean, it's just something that comes natural with the amount of time that you put into it as well. You know, you don't think about it too much. You get in there, you do your thing. As long as you're being honest, you work hard, you're showing really good examples. And I think it's things like that that just you know, they're so common, and they're so instinctive, that it's not something you really focus on. You know, I have to go train tonight, I have to be a leader, I have to do this and that. Your passion and your desire will really show that, you know what I mean, in terms of what way you want to have an influence on the group.
So you're not there during the week thinking, I'm going to have to be making a big speech here on a Friday night of training or yeah. Sunday?
No, not at all.
Have there been many big speeches this year so far around the league after the disappointment of last season, where, you know, I think Davey was very critical of the performance, particularly in the Leinster Championship, and the players seemed to take on board that criticism, even though the season ended disappointment then in the qualifiers against Clare. Like, that criticism of maybe not working hard enough is one of the worst criticisms you can give, particularly a GEA player, where so much of it is built upon emotion. Is that something you face down as a group and talk about in the dressing room, that actually, like, there's a base level of commitment that we have to get to, and if we fall before that, it's a hard dressing room to get back into?
Yeah, we, like, obviously we do you know, have to address those things. And yeah, look, at when we've seen the stats of what our tackle count was, and tackle count is a really good indicator of how hard you're working. Those are things that I suppose we had to really address and be honest with ourselves about too, that, you know, it wasn't really good enough in 2020. And yeah, like, we have addressed some of those things, particularly from last year. We haven't really spoke a lot about it too much this year yet. We just focused on each game as it became the league. And yeah, we just tried to get through the league as best we could. And like I said, a lot of us got over, some lads picked up injuries in during the league, and some picked up just before the league. But I think in the next few weeks or next week that we have before the championship, I think we'll have a lot of lads back from injury and stuff like that as well. So there hasn't been too much in terms of let's say, war cries rounding at the moment. So, we're just really looking forward to 26 now.
Are you aware quite quickly after the game that the work rate wasn't there, that the tackle count wasn't what you would expect?
Well, I was on the bench that day. I had a problem with my hamstring, and I only came on like for the last 10 minutes. But I don't know, from the stand, you just kind of know what kind of a group you're involved with, and you know how honest the group is, and you know that they're not out there, or anyone is out on the field, you know they're not out there trying not to tackle, or they're not trying to put the work in. Obviously, everyone on the field was aware of the knockout game, it's a qualifier. Like, I know lads were trying their best, and it just probably wasn't happening on the day. Clare were just really on their game on the day. They were moving the ball, and there were lads just couldn't really cope with it at the time. But I mean, it's not something that you sit in the dressing room afterwards and say, we didn't work really hard, because I could see the devastation on people's faces. I could see, you know, even their body language, they're exhausted. So I knew everyone was trying their best. But I mean, look at the tackle count spoke for itself, that we just did not work hard enough. But I know lads didn't go out there with the intention of not working hard enough, if you get what I'm saying.
Look, I think at this stage, we all know that, you know, David Fitzgerald isn't just about emotion, that there's a lot more to the man and his tactics and what he does. But last season's championship, without crowds, without, you know, proper Leinster championship hurling atmosphere, did it make a difference, do you think, in trying to get to use the old rugby cliche, emotional pitch right, that actually this is a scenario that nobody imagined? You dream of playing for your county. You don't really dream of playing in front of an empty stand.
Yeah, no, it isn't. It's not something that you do dream of when you're a kid of running out in Croke Park and to an empty stadium. It all comes in part and parcel of your, I suppose, your pre-existing imagination, you know what I mean? You want to run out in front of a big crowd and the roar and the atmosphere. But look at it could have had a bit of an effect, but at the end of the day, there's two teams on the field that are dealing with the same situation. So we just got a few things wrong, I suppose, in last year's championship. And things like, look at Galway, a serious side, Clare, a very good side. And we just came up short against both of them, you know. We just didn't put in a big performance in both games.
Yeah. The league was a bit of a mixed campaign. The game that everyone ended up talking about was the match against Clare, because of everything that followed with COVID and the close contacts. As players, what was your view of what happened on the day and the days afterwards and the accusations that were being thrown around?
To be honest, I don't know how I managed. I said it in earlier interviews. I managed to stay away from any of the speculation that was going on, or any of the back and forwardness of what was coming from the Clare camp or Wexford. I didn't really indulge in much of it, or much of the controversy or whatever was going on. We went down to play a game, and I came home. I was happy to get the win and just moved on to the next week. And so obviously,
there must have been surprise though that. Considering, like, we're coming into a championship that, like, I don't think anyone expected that two players from an opposition team could ever be deemed as close contacts.
I don't know what the issue was there. I'm not quite familiar with the whole situation. Obviously, I knew that we had two guys in our setup that came down with COVID, and look, we weren't together for the 10 days after the game, so there was no such thing as us being together to talk it out. Obviously, that wasn't possible, but it just happened the way it happened. I don't actually know how I suppose the players from the Clare panel deemed as close contacts, or how that expired to be that situation, to be honest.
Davey would say that he's a very different manager than he was 5 years ago, that, you know, he has to interact with players differently now, certainly when he started out with in management. Do you see a different Davey Fitzgerald now than the man who first came in at Wexford?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, he's just the very same. Obviously, his passion and his drive and his desire is all very similar. Yeah, maybe there's probably a side to him where, you know, he probably man manages players a little bit differently. I think he's after getting good, I suppose, at, you know, just being able to approach players in a different way that might suit them better than just, you know, the one approach itself. So probably has been subtle changes, but not major.
Madness is still there. That's all right.
well, I suppose
you have to call it passion. We can call it a bit of madness.
Yeah, the interesting side is still there. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Just reading back over, you know, some interviews you've done through the years, and like one of the first thing that comes up is, again, nearly a decade ago when you're talking about some of the racism issues that you'd experienced as a younger player. And I think there was one in a club game around that time that really brought it to the fore. I'm just wondering, a decade on from that, what life is like, because there's, you know, we're looking in England at the moment with Black Lives Matter, with people taking the knee. While it feels the world should be getting a better place, in fact, it feels like it's becoming far more split in certain parts. How is life and how has your experience been over the last decade?
Yeah, well, I it's interesting that you say that you feel like the world has come more split. I just think it might seem that way simply because more people are speaking out about it now, and it's more addressed in the media, and more people are aware of it actually happening. Let's consider, let's say, when there probably wasn't such a strong social media or media around, that maybe it was happening more, and the fact that it's been highlighted and addressed an awful lot now. It's probably making the situation better, as opposed to it might seem like it's getting worse. But because I from my experience, I found once it was brought to light with me, things have got significantly better. I haven't since that day on a sporting field haven't had any issues in a sporting sense. So
great. What about in everyday life?
It's not something that is hugely involved. Like, it's not something that I experience all the time, but it has come up on occasions. Yes. Just, something to do with a racial taunt or something, but, it's not something I get too worried about either. I just look at it being ignorant, uneducated people. And it's the way I look at it these days.
Right.
It just doesn't seem to affect me as much,
Okay. Yeah, that, I guess that's a difficult thing as a young man to weigh up as to how do you react? Like, do you take a stand? Do you point this out at the time and deal with probably the negative consequences for you as well that will come with that in terms of your mental state and letting it affect you? Or
yeah, I think
what you're doing and just brush it off?
I think when I was a bit younger, I would have reacted in that kind of manner. But I think as you just get a little bit older, you're a little bit more aware of... the type of people that think it's okay to do these things and are not worth your time. So as much as obviously you'd love to put it right, you got to think of, I suppose, other things along those decisions as well. So, but like I said, for me, things have gotten better on a sporting front. And it is a shame when you see it in games or social media, racial taunt. And I think it's great that people speak out about it now and give their support to other people that might be experiencing something similar. Mm. So, I know it might seem like it's getting worse, but I just think it's getting better in terms of people speaking about it. And that's why it might seem like it's getting worse. But through all the social media awareness and everything else, I think it could quite possibly be getting better at the back of it all.
You've got a busy 10 days ahead then, preparing for the start of the championship, and then it's going to become quick and fast, you hope. You got Laois first up. There was a convincing win over them in the league, and then Kilkenny possibly the week after if you go and beat Laois. What's the next 10 days like? Is it just head down?
Well, I know, yeah, like, I suppose it's what date are we at now? The 17th, I think, is it? And what do we have? Another 8 days left. So I'm not thinking about anything after the 26th. The Laois game is going to be a big battle. Like I've said in previous interviews, I've experienced beatings like that as well. I've experienced being beaten by 19, 20 points plus in the past for Wexford. And I know my initial response would be after games when you're beaten by that. You want to go out and you're going to respond. Being a team at the back of a beating like that. But I mean, we were expecting that completely from Laois. But at the same time, that game against Laois in the National League was our first league outing. It was ours, it was theirs. A lot of things are happening, a lot of experimental things. Players maybe been trying to different positions, young guys maybe getting the chance. And we only scored, I think it was about 2-5, I think 2-6 in the last 10 minutes of that game. So it was pretty nip and tuck. A good bit throughout most of the game, and we just kind of pulled away in the end. So expecting a big reaction from Laois, because like I said, I was at the end of those meetings before, and I knew that if I got my chance against that opposition again, you know, you'd make a better account of yourself. So yeah, definitely expecting a big one from Laois.
Yeah, well, listen, Lee, very best of luck over the course of the summer. We can't wait for it to get started. You've been chatting to us with thanks to Centra, who are proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship, launching Centra's Community Matters campaign, which is calling on people across Ireland to show what matters to them in their local community. Just get onto the hashtag Community Matters or check out any of Centra's social media channels. Lee, great to talk to you as always.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks very much.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Quickstar car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.